So welcome back to the, I guess this will be the fourth episode of the 42284 podcast, coming live from the She Shed in downtown Sunfish, Kentucky. We're here with Dale Logston. He's a local legend around here.
I guess.
Infamous. Lifelong resident.
Yeah.
Grew up here, born here, I guess.
I was born in Brownsville.
Yeah, and lived here all your life.
Yeah, Doc Farmer's office.
Yeah, Dr. Farmer, that's a...
Lived in the same house since Daddy built it when I was 2 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So I knew your parents owned that, but I didn't know.
It's starting to feel like home, though, so...
Well, it's getting there, huh? Yeah. we're just going to touch base with some of Dale's life growing up in the area. Want to do a little shout-out. We have metrics that we can see on this podcast, how many people's listening and some of the areas they're from, and we have noticed that we have got 3 international listeners. One from Germany, is that right, Brandon? One from Israel, maybe, and one from England. So if you are the guy from England that I stood and talked to at Busch Gardens a few weeks ago, and you asked me about the shirt I had on, please reach out to us at the 42284 podcast at gmail.com. That's right, isn't it, Brandon?
That is right. If he'll reach out to us, we might send him a shirt or something.
Yeah, we may send him a shirt. But if you're, and we've noticed that one person has listened to both, to two or three.
We've had two listens in the UK.
Yeah, we're assuming it's the same person. So reach out to us. So anyhow, Dale grew up in Sunfish.
Yep.
So, I dug some information up on Sunfish. I'm going to throw it out there and see if you know it.
No. Okay.
So, before we roll with that, is your house considered to be in Sunfish or Hough, or are you on the line?
It's on Sunfish Road, so I just consider myself from Sunfish.
Okay. Yeah, we don't really know where the break is.
Yeah, you know.
Were you a 42284 or a 42250?
We had, depending on which side you wanted to put the mailbox. If you wanted it on the house side, was Hough. But if you wanted the Sunfish address, you could put it on the other side of the road and get it.
So he's right on the line. He could probably be the mayor of both.
Yeah, didn't you used to get your mail at the store down here?
Well, some would come to Sunfish.
And you were up there a lot.
But some would come to Sunfish, but the mailman would drop it off. We used the Hough. Because that way the kids didn't have to cross the road to get the mail.
Okay, okay, that's a good idea.
Anyway.
I got on the internet, you know, this is the fourth episode, which the second episode is really two-part, I guess. So I got on the internet to find out when the post office was started in Sunfish.
It's been there ever since I can.
Well, so somebody wrote a paper, and there's no date on this, but from the University of Morehead State University. And so it tells about all the post offices in Edmondson County. And there are a bunch that I've never even heard of. You ever heard of Mount Vernon?
No.
I've never heard of that area. And there was a Mount Vernon up somewhere around Dickey's Mill, somewhere up in there. But it was just these small community post offices. But what it says is, Sunfish... was named for a nearby stream.
So
the active post office at the junction of 187 and 238, 11 miles northwest of Brownsville, was established as Sunfish, two words, June 27th, 1856, by William Bush. He was the first postmaster. It closed in 1862, but was reestablished, and you're going to like this, Brandon, was reestablished in 1890 by J.E. Hayes, who proposed the new name of Hayesville, but it didn't stick. So then they started calling it Sunfish as one word. But it talks about, you know, the Sunfish Creek, which we kind of talked about, the Sunfish Perch being the name. But something else I found interesting.
So we could be living in Hayesville.
We could be living in Hayesville. You know, Mr. Huffman told me it was Durbin Precinct 200 years ago. And so I guess it went to Sunfish, and it could be Hayesville after that. Wouldn't that have been something?
Missed out.
Missed out. But you're going to like this, Dale. So this is the one on Hough. It says the hamlet of Hough, which this was wrote, I guess. It's actually, if you look at this, it's hand-typed. And so or typed. It's not on a computer. So this was wrote back when Hough was still open. But it says the hamlet post office of Hough is located at 70 and 187. They're in the old service station. On the northwest bank of Bear Creek. It says it was established on June 29th, 1881, by Henry P. Logsdon.
Okay, that would have been one of my great grandfathers was Henry P. I don't know.
Would he have been living in 1881? I think he could have been.
Yeah, I guess he would, because granddad, my dad's daddy, he was born in 96, I think, 1896.
Okay, yeah.
So, but now the Huff Post Office used to be in Herman's old store down there, but after they moved it down to the Y, or down to that service station after. But it was an old store building at one time.
Well, then this was wrote when it was in Herman's old store, because it says it's at the intersection.
Yeah, it was in Herman's.
But it also says, Henry P. Locks, it said that he was the first postmaster, and it was actually near the head of Sunfish Creek. So it was down, I guess, there in that bottom somewhere around where the creeks come together.
Yeah.
And then it was moved in 1926.
Okay, but it was in Herman's old store there for a long time.
Yeah. The area was named for the descendants of William Huff. I don't know who that is. I never saw that name. But anyhow, Brandon was telling me there's no swinging bridge across Bear Creek. The old pillars or something are still there from...
Well, that's down on my place. It's on the west side. You still see the iron rods that held the cables.
The cables, yeah.
Yeah. I've never been on the other side to see, but it's over there.
Interesting.
The Patton boys have got that place across the creek now, where it comes to. It's up there, you know where that Basham Road is, up there at the top of the hill above Grassland?
Yeah, yep.
Okay, it would be right in there on that Basham Road.
When I worked for the power company, that line fed across Kurt's place and over through there. So, yeah, I know right what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So you were born and raised in Sunfish.
Yeah.
Living in basically the same house your whole life. Did you go to school at the Catholic school?
Yeah, I went to eighth grade, and then that was the last year for St. John's. Then went to high school.
Was that 71 or
72? Yeah, I got 71. Okay. Then in 75, I got out of high school, and that was the last year for Sunfish. The next year, they consolidated with Kai Rock and Brownsville.
You think it's a coincidence both closed his last year? I mean...
Shut him down.
Shut him down, yeah. So...
Shut them down.
So you've been a farmer here.
Yeah.
Your whole life, basically. And,
yeah.
Some public work.
Yeah.
And, I remember my memories of you were coming up to the store when I was a kid and aggravating the heck out of us.
Yeah. Letting Cooter smoke on them cigars. And
That explains a little bit right there.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I've got a picture somewhere of Papa Warren and him sitting in the store.
I've got it.
Some years back. Maybe you sent it to me.
Yeah, I've got it. So I may send that to you to put on the
Facebook. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. So the store closed in 95, and we've been talking. Kyle's been in here with us. By the way, Kyle is out on sick leave.
He's MIA.
MIA.
His gallbladder decided it didn't want to be with him anymore. So.
Yeah. I was going to tell something else he'd had done, make up some big tale. I guess we won't. We only gave him 3 sick days, though, in the contract, so he's going to have to – he needs to come limp in here.
Going to have to step it up.
Yeah. But, the store closed in 95. That's when the post office closed. That's when it closed to me. There were some others that ran it afterwards. But it feels like – when I was a kid, Sunfish was a thriving community.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you had the store and a few businesses here and there.
But they just, everything just dried up, and it's all, it's about like Litchfield Walmart. It just, everybody just got their own, the internet now is tearing everything up worse than.
Yeah, we were talking earlier, he said he'd ordered some filters on there. I buy all my oil filters off Amazon because like a fuel filter for a Duramax is $20 cheaper on there.
Yeah.
It's not $3 cheaper, it's $20. And, money's money, right?
Yeah.
$20 almost feed me a meal.
Well, I heard some guys talking on another podcast about, they said Amazon and Dollar General is going to put Walmart out of business. And one of the guys is like, well, that sounds kind of crazy. And another guy said, well, imagine somebody telling your grandpa that Sears and Roebuck was going to be out of business. He'd have thought that was crazy.
Well, he'd have thought you were a lunatic to think that something like that would go out.
So there you go. It's possible.
We've been converting the old Sears building in Evansville. Somebody else is doing it, but we're doing the electric side of it, to a Goodwill. And to go in that building, you know, with it empty and to see how massive it was. And it's two stories, you know, to think it was full of everything when we were, well, not even kids, heck, teenagers. And now it's no more. I'm just thankful Lowe's picked up the Craftsman tool line, I guess, so we can warranty some stuff if needed. So, did you play basketball or anything?
No.
Any sports?
Well, a little bit in eighth grade, we went out to sunfish, and they let us go out there like in the late of the evening. Yeah. I mean, the last period. But that was the only time. I didn't play none in high school or anything like that.
Was the gym and stuff still standing at the – wasn't there a gym down at the Catholic Church?
Yeah, they tore it down.
Was it? And, I guess it was tore down before you all left?
No, it was still there when we left. And the Sunfish Gym, it was still, you know, everything. They was using it, everything.
Yeah, I remember the Sunfish Gym when I was a kid. Mom would take me and Cooter and Tony Pullman out there, and we'd take our bicycles and in there on that old gym floor, and we would ride when it was too cold to ride outside. And then John A. got stacking hay in there. You know, he bought all that. And they backed a grain truck in there with a load of corn one time on top of that floor, and it fell through. And we had to go in there, and we basically tore all of it out. I think he left probably, I don't know, maybe a quarter of it or something to stack hay up on, but... One time, actually, that truck that we've got out there right now, he had that thing loaded with feed, and me and Cooter were riding on the back of that truck on top of that feed. I mean, that just tells you how times change. Heck, I don't even let my kids ride in the back of the truck anymore.
I've rode a million miles sitting on the tailgate of a pickup, three of us across there. Yeah. You know, I mean, ain't no way I'd let a kid of mine do that now.
Yeah, you hit a bump.
Every now and then you'd put your foot drag, you know, I mean...
But we were sitting on that feed, and we could see the clouds rolling in. And so he backed that feed in, or backed that truck into that old gym, and he had two 55-gallon barrels and had boards sitting across them. And he had me and Cooter unload that feed on top of that, those barrels, you know, stack it up. Or I don't know how many, you know, 60, 70-pound bags of feed it was. We'd been over Jake's at the mill. And so we started to pull out of that gym, and that storm hit. And by the time the nose of that truck come out of that gym, an oak tree fell right across in front of it. And he threw that truck in reverse and back in there and hit that table and knocked all that feed over. And you know what he did? You two get out and stand that back up.
Yeah, pick that feed up.
And so we got out, and that storm was, I mean, it was getting after. This one, remember it blew your dad's, do you remember your dad's?
The garage door.
Garage door's blowing out.
I was in the shop. Yeah, I remember that.
That was the storm.
Okay.
And so... We got out, set them barrels up, set the feed back, or set the wood back up, put all the feed back on it, and that gym was moving, shaking us in there, scared to death. We was about 15. And so we get back in the truck finally, and we can't get out of the gym because this big tree's fell across it. So the storm quits, and Cooter and I go crawling through that tree. We get out, and it's another tree. And before it was over, there's probably 15 or 20 trees that had blown down out there, those great big old monstrosity oak trees. And old Larry Seaboat, do you remember him? He had raised German Shepherds out here, lived out here on the Sherwood.
That's probably where your first German Shepherd came from, ain't it?
No, but he's one that put the roof on the shingles on the steeple down there.
Yeah, him and Dad helped roof the steeple that time. Yeah. But he was trying to get in out there. He lived in the gym, and so he had a chainsaw, and we spent all day out there cutting our way out of that to get out. And that's one of those memories that stick with you. Like, who sends somebody out to in the middle of a massive storm that tears the world up to stand 25 bags of feed up? But he did, and we survived. The reason we're so tough now is stuff like that.
Yeah. What don't kill you makes you tougher.
Yeah. So that lower place you've got down there on Kurt White Road, what farm is that? Who?
Dennis French owned it. He died, and Miss French sold it, and I bought it in 75.
Okay. So was that?
That's the French that.
That's Gary White's.
That's Maxine's grandparents, right?
No,
it's Gary.
No, Dorothy's grandparents.
Dorothy's mom and dad.
Dorothy's mom and dad. That's the one that Colin was talking about.
Yeah, Colin talked about her being so beautiful on the inside now. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But Kyle, that'd be Kyle's great-grandmother.
Right.
Yeah, she'd been dead about 10 years, I guess.
So where did she go after?
Well, she lived in that house out there before we got to where Gary, that big barn of Kurt's was.
Yeah.
Or is.
She lived in that house right there by the building.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I knew that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Grandma Luli.
Yeah. I'd forgot about that. Yeah. So. So you were Daniel Durbin's grandson?
No, my great grand
great grandson.
Yeah.
Do you remember the house?
Yeah, it was all the pieces. I mean, I can remember it standing there, but it was already dilapidated. I mean, its windows was broke out of it and everything else.
Yeah. So it stood there where the concrete steps are across from the JT and Benny Duval barn here at Sunfish on 187. Yeah. And it was a mansion in its day, right?
Yeah.
I've got a picture of it somewhere.
Wonder how many acres Daniel owned through there.
About 1,200 acres.
Well, so that farm that I owned up the crooked road there that Guilford Lowe had, he bought that from Daniel.
Did he?
Yeah. And he bought that in 19, maybe 20, something. It was early 1900s for $400.
Well, see, he owned Ralph Durbin's place at one time.
Really?
Yeah.
So Gifford, before he went to teach, that's where he worked for him.
Yeah.
And he, they always said Daniel would feed you before he'd let you work.
I've heard that.
So, you know, if you sit in there and slopped around and ate slow, he didn't want you to work. But if you get in there and get after it and hurry up meat, he knew you were a good worker. That was one of his tests. And so Gifford went in there, and Gifford wasn't about 5 foot tall, weighed 100 pounds, dripping wet, so he wasn't going to eat a lot. Yeah. But anyhow, he fed him, and he hurried up and ate. But he worked for him for several years, and then he went on to be a teacher. But he sold Gifford that farm there on that Bedford Stone house is for $400 and financed it for him. And so that's he kind of got him going. But Gifford's boys told me that when I bought that from him. But he owned a whole country at one time, didn't he?
See, he owned from my place all the way to the Sunfish Creek, except for right in there where Bethel's house is across. But all that right there where Glenn's got his cattle.
Yeah.
Right in there in them bottoms.
Yeah.
I can't think of what that.
You're talking right this side of
Dude and them, across the road from Dude's.
That bottom I told you I'd like to have there. Yeah. We were talking about being a pretty place for a house.
But
who had that?
I don't know. It's Tilford bought it off of somebody, then Dad bought it off of Tilford.
Okay.
Whenever he bought the rest of the, that 300 acres there.
Yeah. And so then you Tilford bought it back from your dad?
Vermont. After Dad died, Mom sold it to him. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know
and,
all that.
Yeah. And that was the Aunt Lee. They called it the Aunt Lee owner place. Uncle Elmer got that across the road, what Dennis has got now, and then which Maggie got what she had, then Dad got the 300 acres between the road and the Sunfish Creek, and then James Lashley got that across the creek.
I didn't realize that. Johnny Capp, do you remember Johnny Capp?
Yeah, that was John A's dad.
Yeah, my great-grandparents.
Yeah, I can just barely remember him.
His mom and dad, they had that farm that, Maxine's got now, and they had one of her brothers, Frank Durbin, which it was Daniel's boy. So Johnny Capp's mom and Daniel were sisters.
Yeah.
And Frank was another brother. He moved to Texas.
Yeah.
And so they were going to go to Texas with him. And so they sold that farm they had where Maxine's got down there to Daniel. And Daniel's dad, who lived back there where Glenn lives now, had a wheat crop to get in.
Yeah.
And they had a threshing machine set
up
out
there.
Yeah,
I've heard that story.
In front of the church in that field.
Yeah.
And it got, it was new technology, I think 1878. And so they had that thing set up, and they ran it out of water and got hot.
Yeah.
And James Durbin was the guy's name. He said, you need to put water in that. And somebody said, if we put water in it, it'll blow up and kill us. And he said, I don't give a rat's hind end who kills. You're not going to mess my new piece of machinery up. And they poured water in it, and it blew up and killed five.
Four is what I heard.
Yeah, I was thinking five, but four maybe. But me and one of them was my great-great-grandfather.
Yeah,
and so they turned around, and Daniel sold the farm back to her, and we stayed. But I almost wasn't,
Well, that's why I've heard John A. say that they was getting ready to move to Texas whenever that that steam engine blowed up and killed
and
it.
And so she stayed. But I was telling a lady about that probably 10 years ago now. She said, I've heard that story before. And I said, really? She said, yeah. And she's not from around here. And about a month later, she sent me a clipping from the Wichita, Kansas newspaper that told that story and had all their names listed. Yeah. I've still got it somewhere.
We need to post it up.
Okay. All right. I'll see if I can dig it out of my Shutterfly box.
But I'd heard that story before that day.
Annie told me that when she was a kid, that old boiler still sit out in that field.
Huh.
They just left it sitting there and didn't have anything with it. I guess junk iron
Yeah.
bought it.
So you're one of how many kids?
There's nine of us.
Are you, where do you fall in line?
Number at? Seven.
Number seven.
Yeah.
It took them a little while to get to perfection, didn't it?
Yeah, I reckon.
Are all of y'all still living? Or y'all
my youngest brother, he was killed in a car wreck in 77.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Right there, pretty close to the what's now the Woodcock building, right?
It's right behind. There was a barber shop and some kind of little shop right there behind where Gary Lawson's office. Yeah. It was right there where them garage doors are on Gary's office now. Him and he got in the car with a couple of boys over at the top of the river hill, and they take off like a streak of lightning, and I reckon a cop was sitting over there where the Drew's carpet is. Anyway, they put his lights on, and they really hit it then, and just a few seconds later, there's all three dead. Killed all three of them.
Was there a Vincent boy with
him? Yeah, Possum Vincent and Bill Tom Duval's boy, Brent.
Yeah, I've heard that story. I didn't realize one of your brothers.
Yeah.
I heard
just the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah. So after you got out of high school, did you just go to farming? Or?
Yeah, that's all I ever did. Yeah. I bought that farm. I got out and out of school and in May, and then that lower place at, on White Road, it come up for sale in October, and I was just naive enough that I bought it. Tell you how naive I was. Nelson and Sanders and his brother sold it. They worked with that old Tartar feller at that time, the old man. Anyway, they was up there auctioning it off, and Nelson come around. You know, anyway, he said something about you want to bid. I said, yeah. And he just walks off. I thought, you know, I said, uppity some buck. So I just go ahead and bid. And then directly come back around, well, the bid's this. I said, that's my bid. He said, well, I may tell you how this works. I come around here and talk to you, then I'll walk off, and then I'll bid. That way nobody knows you're the one that's bidding. So, I mean,
so you bid against yourself there at one time?
Well, I mean, I'd been to auctions before, but I just never had paid no attention like that. But anyway, he said, nah, here's the way it works. So that way people don't know you're bidding. Yeah. But anyway, I give 20,100. They're supposed to be 100 acres or 98 acres. Turned out to about 87. But I was the craziest sumbuck ever would. I mean, I give too much for it. So.
Well, you want your money back?
Well, I'd hate to. But I hate to put you under like that. But I don't know.
What was ground bringing then?
That's about to go on rate, you know. But anyway, I had $3,000 in the bank. I had $3,300, and Mom signed a $2,000 note at the bank, and then Miss French, she carried the rest of it at 7% interest.
After the auction.
Yeah, I mean, you know, after it was all.
Yeah, but I mean, they auctioned it off, and the owner financed it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's, you don't hear that anymore,
and,
do you?
Anyway,
so what year was that, did you say?
That was in 75.
Well, 7% probably wasn't horrible then, was it?
But no, but see, it got up there. Well, I paid as much as 17% in the late 70s and early 80s.
Dad told me when they built that house up the Crooked Road in 80, they started in 84. He paid 16%.
Yeah, I mean,
farming at that time and the interest being what it was, I mean, you still, what year did you buy that 674?
It was in, it's a 78, I think.
Well, did you buy it new?
Yeah.
And then
it was,
did you buy
then,
that?
Then was, they was around $7,000 new.
What about the Gleaner combine? Did you buy it new?
Yeah, it was, around 42,000 for it. That's a 17%.
Year?
That was an 80. That was a 17%.
And you bought the 70, was it 78 Chevrolet that you bought almost new?
No, it was new. I'm thinking it's around $8,000.
A combine was 42,000?
Yeah, that was.
Or 4,200.
1,000.
42,000
for a two-row K2 Gleaner.
Yeah. Wow!
At 17% interest.
Yeah, I mean,
you paid more for the comp, which I guess farmers do that day too. They pay as much.
Ain't nothing out to put $1 million in a combine.
Yeah.
So,
wow!
But I never dreamed a K2 cost that new.
That's what it costs. That's both heads.
A two-row corn head and a 13-foot platform.
13-foot platform. No, it's 12-foot. 12-foot platform.
Huh.
But,
I'll never forget riding with you in that when I was a kid over here and on John A. and Martha in that bottom.
Yeah.
Past that Duval Lane there. and it catching on fire.
Yeah, but
we I was sitting on toolbox. There's old metal toolbox in the floorboard.
Yeah.
And that thing caught it, and boy, I mean, you tore out of there, which I understand, right?
That best thing I remember, the valve cover gasket was leaking.
Yeah,
on it.
Yeah. And, it, and you used a had just a water your water jug for the day, put it out.
Yeah,
it didn't. I think it melted the melted throttle cable or choke cable a little bit. That's all it hurt. Yeah. But I mean, old Dale could.
I have seen Dale when he gets in firefighting mode, because I have caught a hay roller on fire at his house twice.
Really?
And let me tell you, the man can pack 2 5-gallon buckets of water quicker than anybody I ever seen.
Got to do what you got to do.
Now, I was probably 10 or 11 years old, I guess, sitting on that toolbox. I used to love getting a ride in that. Any piece of equipment, but that combine, you know.
That's back at the air conditioner worked on it back then, I guess.
We had the door closed, but I don't remember if the air conditioner worked. But the door was always closed because of dust.
Yeah.
And Kyle's dad, Gary, you know, back, I mean, that was 1990 or 91, somewhere around in there. And you didn't have fuel tanks in the back of trucks. Not everybody had that. And so Gary would bring fuel up. Was it a gas or a diesel?
It was a diesel.
But he would bring fuel over there to us in that old one of them old trucks of his. He brought fuel over there a time or two.
But
I don't know if that's something him and John A. had worked out or something. Who knows?
But
was that one of the only combines in this part of the country at that time?
There's several OAFs and stuff like that in.
When I was a kid, Dennis had one sitting in a building up there.
It's still there. Is it a K?
Yeah, he bought it off of Geneva after Sam Tom died.
Okay,
Sam Tom died in 79 or 80.
Yeah, I remember.
And then David South had one.
Yeah, he had a little A.
Okay.
No, it was a E. It was an E.
And then we had, after you'd shell forced, and we bought a New Holland.
Yeah.
And I ended up with that thing. I had it for a little while. And then Jonathan ended up with it. And then we had, do you remember that old John Deere that John A. had, didn't have a cab on it? He had like a
I remember one sitting down here. It was an 45? Old 45, yeah. I think. Yeah.
I'd like to have that thing back now. You see those people are fixing them up and driving them in parades. They're neat. Now, weren't you a magistrate for a little while?
Yeah, for nearly 6 years.
I remember you doing that. What spurred you to want to do that?
I don't know. I just didn't know no better.
Was it a headache?
That's a good way to find out about people and find out, because if you run into somebody and say, boy, it's dark outside at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you say, boy, it is, ain't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Well, was at that time, I guess Ed was already into politics when you became
magistrate.
Yeah,
he'd already left out here, though. I mean, he was in Frankfort by then.
So where did Ed start into politics at?
He ran for judge in 73.
And got it?
Got county judge when he was 26.
And then he went from that to?
He just went to Frankfort, you know, and then he got to be ag commissioner in 91, I think, when he won that. So
wasn't he something over transportation at one time?
Yeah, he worked in that. He's high up in that at one time.
So my mom and what's Ed's daughter's name? Laura. Married to Craig. Laura.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were friends, and so we got invited up to the state fair one year.
Yeah.
It was going on, and so we go up there, and they had a suite. I guess Ed or somebody did took us in there, and Ed handed me this piece of paper, and he said, "Here, you can go ride rides." And I looked at it, and I thought, "What's that?" And so I go up. He said, "You don't even have to wait for the line." He says, "Go right to the front." And I'd go right to the front, and I'd walk right through. You know, there'd be a big, long line. I'd hand to them. They'd put me right on a ride. Never waited in line the whole time. Oh, I really thought I was something. Boy, you hand them out, and they'd look at it and look like, who's this idiot? But I'm kind of like Rodney Carrington said that time. It'd been nice they'd give us a little toolbox or something packed around. That way everybody didn't think you was some idiot walking in front of that line. At least they'd think you were working on something or something, you know, if you had a little toolbox or a flashlight or something.
Yeah, I reckon he got some tickets one year. He got so many being commissioner. Garth Brooks.
Yeah.
Which he never heard of Garth Brooks. I reckon everybody in the state called him wanting tickets to that thing. He done give them all away. I've heard him tell about that.
Well, hold on. Okay, so I've heard a good story since we're on Ed here. Didn't Ed buy the room in Owensboro for you and Pearl when you got married?
I reckon.
So you and Pearl get married in Brownsville?
Over at Mammoth Cave in the hotel over there.
Okay. And then you went to Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
And ate supper in Brownsville.
Yeah, Randall Wilson, Mary Lou, and Esther and Paul was there. Old Randall, he laughed. He said, "Boy, you're starting her out right, ain't you?"
And then Dale said the only reason they went to Owensboro and spent the night was because Ed had bought the room. So
yeah. I bet he hated to spend the gas.
And when you're in love, I mean, what difference does it make? But
how long have you and Pearl been married now?
Be 34 years in November.
Really? I think I remember being at a Edmondson County High School basketball game, meeting her for the first time.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was always super nice. I've never been around her a whole lot. But
hey, she's way too good for me.
She's bound to be a good woman. Bound to be a good woman. Anybody drive a car around with a 2x6 bumper for so many years?
I think it's a 2x10.
Oh, 2x10?
Yeah, it was treated, too.
Treated 2x10.
Ain't nothing too good for our old automobile.
So for the folks listening, Pearl was involved in an accident and it tore up the back of the car. And so Dale takes the car to, I guess, Randall, and Randall welds a couple of pieces of angle iron on the back frame. And Dale just puts a treated 2x10 on the back, screws the license plate to
now,
it.
Now, this was a nice car, right?
Yeah, it was so she wrecked it.
It was an old, what?
Cutlass, I don't know.
Like a little, it wasn't the big.
It was a four-door. It was a four-door.
Yeah, it was like the Buick Skylark version. But anyhow, it was a nice car, but you always, I went by there the first day and that 2x10 across the bike, and I thought, well, that must be temporary. 4 or 5 years later, he was out there putting a coat of water sealer on it one day, keeping from rotting.
ended up selling that to Marcy, and Bobby used to work on the, I can't think of his name. He used to work on the garbage
Merriman,
yeah. Sold that to them.
He drove it for a long time,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah, the bumper stayed on the last time I seen it.
And then I bought the next hand-me-down car. I bought the Monte Carlo when she upgraded.
Oh, yeah.
She went from the Oldsmobile to the Monte Carlo. Yep. I bought the Monte Carlo.
Would you like to tell about the tractor running off over the hill?
I'd rather not, but it did.
That will be a good one.
Tell us about it.
Well, I was just moving hay down there at the lower place, and it was on that hillside.
What was it?
It's a 674 International.
It's the one he bought new.
And anyway, I got off of it to pull the truck up, which the parking brake didn't work anyway, but I didn't turn the wheels. I looked around. There it goes down over the hill. I took off running, but I don't know. It's a good thing I didn't catch it because I may not be here today if I had caught it. So,
didn't you say it was already going fast enough? There was tools bouncing out of the toolbox as it went over the hill?
It was moving right on.
So what stopped it?
Well, it just hit into a bank down there and broke the front end out from under it.
I'm the one that took the record down there and drug it out, and we drug it out in two pieces.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It tore the front end off of it, but.
Did you fix it, or did you buy another one like it? I remember
I got another one like it. Then Jimmy had just overhauled the motor in it for too long, so when we needed a motor for the one I bought one just like it. And once we needed another motor, he just took it apart and took the motor off and had to put a new crankshaft. It bent the crankshaft. Yeah.
I was in on either rebuilding it the first time or helping swap it, one of the two. I remember it being over here when they had swapped the crankshaft out on it. How long has it been since you had pigs?
Well, it's been 25 years.
And I guess
they run all the hog farmers out in 98, 99.
Yeah, I remember hogs just went to nothing.
Yeah.
One time I was working up here at the slaughterhouse for the Davises, and hogs got so cheap. I bought a hog one time for $25, and they cut it up for me. You know, I worked there; they didn't charge me anything. And so I had $25 in a whole pig, cut up and everything. And I was still living at home. I gave it to Mom for Christmas. Her and Doug, and they're like, "Where'd you get all?" And I'm like, "I got $25 in this." And they, we just couldn't believe that it was so cheap.
But you could take a 250-pound hog to Litchfield, that buying station, and they get 12 cents a pound, $30. You could walk down there to Winn-Dixie, and they was selling the tenderloin out of them hogs that size for more than I was getting for the whole hog.
You couldn't buy part of the hog for what you got of it.
First time Pearl come over in here, after me and her started going together. Well, first of all, when Mama died a couple weeks later, Ed brought me a German Shepherd pup, old Patches. And anyway, brought it down there. They figured I'd marry the first one I'm around into, but I didn't. But so they got me a dog. Anyway, so Patches, she has this big litter of pups. She's a grown dog. And me and Pearl's going to the house. Here comes Patches dragging a big old hog leg down from the hog house with all them pups. I told Pearl, I said, well, she's breaking you in, right? But me and her could be out walking along, and that dog, she'd come up between us and push me away from her.
Yeah.
So after we got married, Pearl worked in the restaurant over there at the hotel at Mammoth Cave, and she got to bringing scraps home. About 3 days, that dog was sticking its head in the car every time she'd come in. But not one.
She paid her off.
Yeah, Pearl got to be her buddy real quick.
So I've got a female German Shepherd right now.
Yeah.
And she is my dog. She does not listen to anybody else, you know, but I talk to her just like you and I are having a conversation. But if my wife is around, like if she comes down to the shop and I'm messing around, that dog follows her around everywhere. And so the other night, McDonald's is right down the road. She said, I'm going to run down to McDonald's and get us some supper. Said, I don't have cooks. I'll bring you something while you want. I told her. She come back with a double cheeseburger for herself. When I look over, she's peeling one of them pieces of beef off it. I said, well, why didn't you just get a regular cheeseburger? You know, you'd saved a dollar. You know, man, I got to be tight. She said, yeah, but I can't do this. And she goes breaking it up and feeding that dog. Well, that's the reason that dog follows her around. Yeah. Lindsay's bribing her. I said, you ain't gonna steal my dog from me.
Yeah,
you try.
It works.
How many German Shepherds? You've had several German Shepherds.
I've had four, I guess. Well, I had two that I got that they didn't last very long, but I've had four that lived, you know, be 8, 10 years old.
When you get a good one, they're good.
Yeah.
And when you get aggravating.
Oh, I've got one now. She's a little over a year old, and she's aggravating this thing. I mean, I'm just too old to raise a pup.
Yeah. I've decided when this one runs out of life, I don't know if I'll get another one or not. That one of mine will dig a hole in the yard that you
That's spray.
I mean, you just about hide in it.
That's the way Stella is.
Yeah. So do you know any good shenanigans that went on in Sunfish? Any good pranks or?
Well, no. I can't really think of none right now. I've heard a lot of stories, but I can't tell them here.
Were you in on getting the set of keys for?
Well, he left it up at Charlie Hayes's to get us some tars put on it, and Charlie had a set made, I reckon, the way I heard it.
Multiple sets.
Yeah.
And passed them out.
Yeah. Anyway, I know over there at the mill, they'd catch him back there in the back, and they'd get out there and back his truck up a little bit, and they'd say, boy, you better get that clutch fixed in that truck, get things are slipping on it.
So he was thinking he was rolling out in the parking lot.
But the best is the time at Timmy Joe, which they faced the trucks up towards that, well, where the building is at now. Timmy Joe got a great big old brazier and put it across the front of the grill.
Yeah.
No work, went to the bank at dinner. Anyway.
So he drove out of town with that across the front of it.
So we talked about the calf getting put in Autry's. Was I in on that?
I wasn't there when he got there that night at dark.
But you helped pry the calf.
I helped put the calf in the car. But.
I feel like I'm at confession. Were you ever around the mill up here any?
Not a whole lot, but.
Wonder what year it closed.
I'd say Goble bought that in the early to mid-70s, but I'm not, after he bought it, he never did do much business, you know, other than just his own.
So I had to interview John A. one time in high school. Jamie Carnes, who was one of our teachers, I don't even know what class it was or what they called it, but you had to interview somebody who had influenced your life that was older than you. Well, I lived down there with him, basically. Me and Cooter were down there all the time. Yeah. And so I asked John A. if I could interview him. He said, yeah, you can interview me. And so I had this just standard list of questions. Well, he got to telling stuff he had done over the years, right? And so he told me that he owned the mill up here at Sunfish. and they had one at Brownsville.
Yeah.
And then they had one at Collegiate.
Yeah.
And that the IRS sent him a letter that they were going to audit him. And he said, I'd been cooking the books. He said, I knew that it was going to be a problem. And he said, so I called my insurance agent the next morning. Said, which one of them's got the most insurance on it? And is that one at Collegiate?
Yeah.
And he said, so we moved all the record keeping to Collegiate. He said, I went to Georgia to see my sister. She was in a convent down there somewhere. Yeah. He said, they called me while I was down there, said that one burnt. He said, it's just a tragedy, you know. He said, but the IRS showed up. He said, they saw my records had burned up. He said, they didn't do anything. He said, they told me not to worry about it.
So did you include that in that interview back then when he was still alive?
There was a bunch of stuff he'd told. And so I took it to school. We had to play him in class. They were 15-minute interviews, and they wouldn't let me play mine. I got 2 minutes into it, and they asked me to turn it off.
It's a shame you don't still have it.
You know, I could possibly have that. I lost that when that cabin burned up on the hill of Dad's. I thought it had burned up in that, and I found a tape. I don't know, a couple of years ago, I was going through some stuff, and I found a tape that could possibly be that interview, but I don't own a tape player. Do you have a tape player?
No, I don't think
I don't even know anybody that owns a tape player anymore. And I'd be afraid. I'd almost be afraid to eat it. So I'd like to find somebody that's got one of those.
That can convert it.
Convert it to a digital file now.
Yeah, if anybody out there listening has got a way to convert a cassette. Is it a regular cassette tape?
Yeah, but let's not get on, because I don't know what I've done with it again.
Oh, okay.
It's in storage, and it'd take me probably half day to even figure out what
So you just need
is.
To find it first.
I need to
then,
find it.
And then we'll see if we can find somebody.
Yeah, dig somebody out that can do it. So I had a cousin converted all the old 8mm movie tapes when I was a kid.
I reckon Ray can do that.
Ray Durbin?
Yeah.
Really?
I need to check on that, because I've got some up here.
Really?
Yes.
So I've got all of them when Dad and his siblings lived out there where Tom lives now.
Mm-hmm.
When that house that Mike and Fran lived in.
Okay.
That brick house,
yeah.
You know, that John A. built that.
Yeah.
And it was that time period. It's from around the farm and stuff. And I've got all of it on a
I believe that
DVD.
Place, even with that house and all, it brought 51,000. That sold in early, about 73.
I've still got a sales flyer from that auction.
Yeah.
And that's where Charles out here bought one of those D-17s he got. It come from John A.'s sale down there.
Okay.
And Bill Tom Duval told me one time, which did Bill Tom passed away, didn't he?
Yeah, Bill
Tom. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. He had a tiller, a walk behind garden tiller. He said, I bought that from your grandfather's auction back in 70, whatever. You said three?
Yeah, about 73, something like that.
So I guess that was John A. and Dorothy divorced.
Yeah, that's when they divorced.
They had a sale out there. So.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot on here about people being in the service and veterans. Did y'all, was there any in y'all's family?
Well, Daddy was. He was during World War II. He was in the Air Corps. Him and Uncle Jake and Uncle Paul was.
Okay.
Uncle Paul, he
I knew Jake and Paul were.
Yeah.
I don't guess I realized Paul was a rear dad.
Yeah, he retired out of the Air Force.
Okay.
Was Annie the last of your dad's siblings to pass away?
Let's see. Annie, I guess she was.
There's none of them are still.
No, Aunt Liz is still alive.
Is she?
Yeah, she's 90. She lives in Bowling. She never did marry or nothing, but Aunt Liz is still alive. Then Aunt Yvonne's alive. That's when she's married. And then Uncle Martin's wife, she's still alive. She lives up around Crestwood.
Okay. Yeah, I knew Yvonne was.
Yeah, so them three, all of Mama's side's gone now. Every one of them is gone.
Now, what was your Mama's maiden name?
She was a Jarbo from up around Well, where Rock Creek runs into Nolan River over
well,
there, where
did,
she
how
is
how did
right.
your dad meet somebody? I mean, that's a distance for that time,
Daddy,
right?
Daddy, one of John A.'s sisters was going to Mount St. Joseph.
In the convent down
of,
West Louisville.
One of them that was, that made the nun.
Yeah.
And anyway, Daddy, Mama was going down there. She was at boarding school. She, you know, she was working her way through school. And that's where Daddy went down there one time with Johnny Cap to take that girl down there, and that's when he met Mama. And
really,
I reckon
that's interesting.
Wow!
And both, I mean, to go, I mean, that's hour and 30 minutes from here.
Well, it's a good hour, you know. Having
Owensboro's an hour, and it's 30 minutes out in West Louisville.
Yeah,
and then to meet somebody from down there, and then live 25 minutes apart.
Yeah. So anyway, they got my daddy was in the Air Corps. Anyway,
was he overseas? Did he see?
No, he didn't see his skin. They wouldn't let him go. They wouldn't let him go overseas. Alan was married in Nebraska, my oldest brother. Then the rest of us are back here, you know, whenever.
Okay.
But
one of my wife's best friends is starting a new job tomorrow. Tomorrow's Monday. Yeah, tomorrow. At Mount St. Joe.
Yeah.
She's doing some type of, I don't really know what she's doing, but it's something in the office down there.
Yeah.
And I told her, I said, you know, us Durbins have been kind of part of that down there, yeah. You know, because two of John A.'s sisters went through that.
Yeah, that's what I say.
Margaret and Lucille.
Yeah.
Were both started there, and then, you know, one of them got transferred to Colorado. That's how John A. ended up out there.
Yeah.
And then Georgia and... They ended up both passing away in Cincinnati. Yeah. They're both buried up there.
Yeah,
that's something you don't hear any more people going into the priesthood or convent.
Yeah, yeah,
it's kind of a thing of the past.
I never did really think I needed to be one.
Yeah, I figured they'd probably bust a game up if I ever tried to get in there. Altar boy's about as far as I ever went. Were you ever an altar boy, Brandon?
No.
You never were,
no.
Were you?
John A. always said he thought he had a calling. Now, that would have been an interesting church to belong to if he'd have got in there.
Yeah, I've heard him. I heard him say that one time.
I have. I've heard him say it, that he thought he had a calling to be a priest. I thought, well, that's one parish there that never would hurt for money.
That'd been a heck of a bingo night, wouldn't it?
I imagine. Durbin's friendly finance and all that.
Yeah. You got a good story on him? Anything you can think of that just was funny looking back?
And I can't think of nothing right off.
Well, if you do, I'd like to know him. You know, growing up, it was normal the way things went around here. Looking back now, I'm like, I can't believe that stuff went on. You know, when he passed away, he had a bootlegger still working for him.
Yeah.
And
I got one, I can tell you.
We, at the funeral, the bootlegger was more tore up than we were.
I imagine.
You know, he was up. I think we might have packed him out of the funeral home. He was just, I mean, tore up. We were too, but so what you got?
I come in over at the store one morning and I got it was probably 8:30. Anyway, there's some arguing going on inside, so I just stayed outside and directly it calmed down. So I went on in, and there's a fella, I don't know who he was, where he's from, or never seen him since. But anyway, he was black and blue. Somebody had beat the dog water out of him.
Yeah.
So I went on in, and anyway, John A. gets, I said, what's going on, Johnny? And he got to tell me. He loaned this old boy $3,000 a year before, and he had paid 10% interest per month on that $3,000 for a year. He'd paid $3,600 in interest. Hadn't touched the principal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Durbin's friendly finance.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, the Friday before, or sometime the week before, he'd come down there. John A. gave him $300, said, I've been talking to a fella. I paid you $3,600 interest on that $3,000. Said, I ain't paying nothing on the principal.
He felt like he paid enough.
Said, that fella said this is 20% interest. That's more than the banks charge.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that weekend, he had went, what's it, the Black Cat or something down on 54.
Yeah, yeah. No High County.
He was in that bar down there that night. Somebody had took a little old billy club and nearly, he said, I reckon if he hadn't crawled under a truck, he thought he was going to kill him.
Yeah.
Of course, I had to ask John A. I said, well, John A., did you pay that fella to do it? He just grinned. He said, it don't make no difference if I did or if I didn't.
Yeah.
He thinks I did, and he's going to tell all of his buddies. That was all he ever said. He never would admit that he did, but he's...
So, He told,
that's a true story.
He told that story on that tape when I interviewed him.
Did he?
Said that old boy had, I mean, exactly what you just said there. Yeah. And that old boy went somewhere and somebody had just back killed him.
There's the black cat down there.
Okay, that building's still standing, but it's not the black cat anymore.
Yeah, I've never been down there, but I didn't.
I've been by there. At one time, driving by there, you could tell it was a place you probably wanted to throw your cap in, and if it didn't come back out, you might walk on in.
I have been there before.
Why does this not surprise me that Tim had something to do with the black cat?
Growing up here, you know, it's just part of it. There's, like I said, a lot of alcohol consumed in Sunfish over the years.
Right.
And Dad, when I was 15 years old, him and one of his buddies said, "We want to go to the Black Cat. You want to drive us?" Now, like I said, I was 15, but at this point in time, I had already drove to Colorado. We had went to Colorado the summer before, me and Dad in a little S10. And when we left Kentucky, I started driving. And I didn't stop until we got almost to Colorado. I drove all night. Well, until we got gas, stopped, got gas.
You said Sonoma. S10? That little Sonoma.
And I drove all the way at 14, 15 years old. Yeah. So Dad says, "You want to take us to the Black Cat?" Well, I guess I can. And so I drive them from Sunfish to the Black Cat, which is a good hour at least.
That's some crooked roads, too.
Yeah, 54 is not. I go in, I get a Coke, I shoot pool with the people. Dad and his buddies sit there at the bar. We come home, cut in one of them roads up there on Sunny Point. Up Sawmill Hill. Come through the back side of the farm and go to come out right there where they had the greenhouses across from Ray Bays's. That's old logging road. And we go to come out there. Now, like I said, I had drove an hour down there and an hour home. Come up through those woods, go to pull out on the blacktop, and Dad's buddy says, "Smoke that back tire." And I'm 25, 30 foot from the blacktop, grass, and I kicked that thing in the grass and get that back tire spinning, and the state had dug that culvert out, and you couldn't see it. And I went off in that thing and threw Dad and the buddy through the windshield out onto the hood. 4 o'clock in the morning, there we sit. You know, it wasn't any cell phones to call anybody. And so Dad, you know, it whooped him good. If they hadn't been intoxicated, it probably killed him. And so I took off and walked from there up and got that little Kubota tractor we had and come back down there and pulled it out. But I was 15 years old when that happened.
So
Father of the
this
year.
Is probably about the same time that the door incident with the Sonoma. I guess the door had been after this?
This was probably the summer before.
Okay, so tell the door story while we're on the subject of the Sonoma.
So it had snowed, and Dad had bought that little Sonoma. And he bought it new in 93. So, yeah, I think this would have been the is it the winter before or winter after this Black Cat incident? And so it had snowed, and Dad was in Louisville working. And me and Mikey Hampton and Brian Davis got that little Sonoma out, and we drove all over the country in that snow. I shot 3 donuts down there in the middle of the crossroads at Round Hill in it. I mean, spinning, sliding, slipping, sliding, donuts, whatever. We go take Brian Davis home and pull out of the end of E.G. Nash Road. Me and Mikey is a 5-speed truck. First gear, second gear. And when I went to third gear, never spinning the tire, that thing slipped off in the ditch. And it went down in the ditch and up that bank. And there we sit. Snow on the road. You know, wouldn't go. So we walked down to Ray Durbin's. And Ray was not home, but Debbie was. And Debbie said, "Well, Ray's not here, and I don't know what to do." And I said, "Well, can I use your phone?" So I called John A. And John A. come up with that truck right out there in the driveway.
The dooley.
John A. comes up there, and he hooks me with about an 8-foot piece of chain. And he's up on the road, and I'm down in the ditch. And he yanks before I get in the truck. And I had the door open, and when he did, it pulled that door out of my hands, and it folded that door all the way back around to that front fender of Dad's truck. I mean, it was facing forward and fell off on the ground. And I thought, oh, my gosh. And so he never stops. He drags me all the way down that ditch and finally up in the road, and he gets out. And the door's laying, you know, 30 yards up the road. And he said, "What did you do?" I said, "I was hollering, stop."
He couldn't turn his head.
He couldn't turn his neck. His neck couldn't hear.
Yeah, his neck was so stiff, he could not turn
and
his
head. And I said, Dad's going to kill us. He said, us? Hell. Number one, you ain't about 14 or 15, you got his truck out. Number two, this is on you. That was my first lesson he really ever taught me. I said, well, I don't know what to do. He said, when you get that door, put it back in the back of the truck and get this truck home. So me and Mikey wallered that door, put that back, drove from down there on EG or Sunfish Round Hill back up to where we lived at on the crooked road with no door on this truck, snow, cold. Mikey's there. I'm like, I don't know what to do. So we got that truck, pulled it in the garage, put the door back on it. It fit back. You couldn't even tell it had a dent in it. It sit there for 2 days. Dad comes home from Louisville. I was asleep. Next thing I knew, I was in the bedroom floor. And he had grabbed me by the feet and yanked me out of the bed. And my head was the first thing hit the floor. I mean, kerthump. And he was mad. I get up. What's the matter? He said, I went out and opened that door on that truck. He said, that son of a fell off and about broke my foot. So he opened that door, and that whole door and fell off and mashed his foot. Oh, he was mad. He was mad. You know, he never wrecked that truck. None of us ever really wrecked that truck. He just drove it normally. You know, I get it honestly. I can't keep anything nice. He turned that truck in on insurance in about 96 or 97. And they totaled it. It had never been wrecked. He just beat and thrashed and... I knocked the door off.
I thought you told me you had convinced him that he was the one that tore the door off.
I may have, yeah. I think maybe I convinced him he tore it off.
Yeah.
I said, oh, you were right. You know, because they'd get out on a tear and they'd be out for 2 or 3 days and you wouldn't see them. And I think I did convince him he'd tore the door off. Yeah, maybe I did. I think he said, oh, he was mad. He was livid. But I mean, you can imagine going opening your door in your truck and it just falling off and mashing your foot. So. We were out one night up on Lower Ridge. We were back in the back there. And I mean, it's late. We drive back through there. There's a mud hole in the road. And it's still there today. It's a spring or some wet spot. We come back through there. And there's Dad's truck in the middle of that mud hole. Well, I wonder how long that's been sitting there. Well, we pull up and Dad was sitting in it. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm stuck. You ain't stuck. He said, no, I'm stuck. I said, you ain't stuck. Get out of there. He got out of it, and I got in that little truck, and I held it flat to the floor, wide open, and pulled it down into drive. And it jumped about 8 foot forward in that mud hole. And I never let off of it, popped it up into neutral, let them RPMs get back up. I popped it up in reverse, and it jumped about 10 foot. But I did that 4 or 5 times, and it finally jumped out of that mud hole. Of course, I'd just done it. You know, anytime I could mess with Dad.
I think that's when you, ain't that when you tore the front end pretty well out from under it?
Yeah, it's a different time.
Oh.
But anyhow, I got out, and I mean, it. By the time I got out, it was running hot. You know, I'd been holding to the floor. I got out, I told you you wasn't stuck. You know, we just got in the truck and left. Next morning, I got up, and he was sitting there at the table. He hadn't been to bed yet. He said, that truck won't never be the same. He said it's still in four-wheel drive. He said, we won't come out of four-wheel drive out there. I mean, Cooter run it off the road one time. We spun it around in the road and run it off in a ditch backwards. And it somehow, in the spin around, it twisted the whole front end out from under that truck. And, I just took it and parked it. I didn't know it had really done that. And I took and parked it. He got in it, and the front end, I think, basically fell out from under it. He took it up to Randall's, and Randall welded all the frame and brackets and everything back in the forum. John A. had this old cow, Dale. I mean, she's a full-grown cow, and she was crazy. And we'd moved all the cattle from the Martin farm over here to this Tilford farm, and we couldn't get her. And so we'd go up there every day and feed her, and we'd get her, you know, hemmed up in a pen, and she'd tear out. And he finally said, I tell you two boys what. He said, if y'all can get that cow in that trailer, I'll take her off and we'll split the money. He said, we'd mess with her for 2 weeks. And Cooter had bought a 300EX new, so that was 97 or 8, somewhere around in there.
Probably.
And Cooter said, I think I can rope that cow off that four-wheeler if you can get me close enough. Okay.
That the one to run 90 mile an hour?
No, that was later. I think that was one I had. I sold him. He got out here passing cars. He got out here passing cars on that thing, and the motor come apart on it. And when I took the motor back apart to redo it, the wrist pins for the pistons were in the exhaust. I mean, I've never seen that before. I've had a lot of engines apart, and a lot of them that have went to hell at high RPMs. I've never seen that. But anyhow, so we're going to rope this cow. We get on that 300EX, and we get bouncing across this field, and he's got that lasso going. I can hear it lasso over top of my head whipping. And I run up beside that cow, and he stops that lasso and just lays it over her neck. And when he did, you know what I did? I stopped. And Cooter left. I'm telling you, I stopped and kind of slid that four-wheeler sideways, and he went, shoo, and off that four-wheeler. And down through the field he went, dragging, dirt flying, cow manure. And that cow run off in them woods, and he finally got up on his feet and got that rope around a bunch of trees and choked her out down in those woods. And so I get down in the woods. You know, I wasn't going to get in there and get hurt. I'd done decided that he's got it. You know, he's doing a fine job. Ain't no sense in messing with him. So he gets up on his feet. He gets her choked down. I said, what are we going to do with her now? He said, I think we get that trailer down in these woods. Okay. So we go get to that dooley sitting around there in the driveway, that truck and trailer. We back it down through these woods and back it right up to her. We get another rope slipping around her neck, up through the trailer and out the side of the trailer. He gets good hold of it. All right, cut her loose. I yanked that other rope off her, and she got her second wind. And she took off, and I could see him. I couldn't see the side of the trailer, but I could see him, and I could hear that rope around them bars, and they're going, zzzz. And I could see him going toward that trailer, and I heard, bam! And I could see that old trailer shaking. And she had sucked him upside that trailer, and he had ate it. And down through the woods she went again. So we finally got her roped and choked down up in that trailer. And John A. split the money with us. But I will tell you one thing about Cooter. He is gritty. He ain't going to let go. Because when you got a 1,200-pound cow sucking you down through the woods, I would have let go pretty quick. I would have let go before I left the four-wheeler, but he didn't. He rode her off there. But see him leave that four-wheeler. It makes me sad we didn't have cameras back then. Yeah. We would have been internet superstars.
No doubt. No doubt. So, we've got to get Dale a T-shirt. You want to give a little shout-out to our designer?
Yeah. Brandon's wife, Austin, is our designer. She does our T-shirts and our banners and Hayes Farmhouse Designs is what it is. And she's on Etsy, correct?
Etsy and Facebook.
And she does good work. I'm really impressed.
She can look do at anything.
Look at our artwork. It's pretty interesting what she's doing. And she can put it on a T-shirt, banner. There's all kinds of stuff laying in the She Shed studio here.
If anybody needs a custom design.
Custom design, yeah. She can help you work through that if you've got a business or something. So reach out to her and she'll give you some hand. Dale, you got anything else for us?
Nah, that's about it. Appreciate you boys having me up.
Well, it has been a joy growing up here with you.
Maybe I ain't acting too redneck.
Well, appreciate the followers. Appreciate the listening.
Spread the word.
Spread the word. Tell your friends. If you are from England, reach out to us. We would like to know who's listening, the one person that's listening to us over there. I told you all it'd be worldwide. That counts. So spread the word over there.
We'll try to get Kyle back for the next one.
Yeah. Tell your buddies in England that there's a bunch of hillbillies over in Kentucky in the States who aren't quite Yankees, but, I mean, they call us Yanks over there. So tell your friends. So, Dale, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Yep.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.